You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to 1-2-Me-You, brought to you by Trust Records. This episode features two very talented photographers, Edward Culver and Atiba Jefferson. Edward took many iconic photos, including the cover of the Trust reissue of Circle Jerk's Group Sex and Wild in the Streets. Atiba shoots everything from skateboarding to the NBA and recently directed the video for the song Wild in the Streets. The conversation you're about to hear took place at Ed's house in Los Angeles, California. The episode was also filmed, and to view it, head over to Trust Records YouTube.
Ed, thank you for taking the time. I'm a huge fan. I know, like, all your photography, looking at it. My brother, it was probably 5 or 6 years ago. I don't know where he got it, but got me the damaged photo.
The photo or the album or what?
No, the photo, a print. Of yours. So I have one of your prints up at my house, actual photo. I don't know if it was a show you went to of yours, but I was very excited. When did you first pick up a camera and what made you pick up a camera?
An old friend of mine came over and bought a 35 millimeter camera. And we were goofing around taking pictures in the yard. I'd never worked with one at all. And took some pictures in the inside and outside. And then not very long after that, I kind of ended up with a really cheap piece of junk 35, and that's actually when I started going to punk shows, and I started taking it with me and shooting photos. That's what I started out shooting, as punk shows, back in late 1978.
Were you going to shows first, or were you shooting pictures first? Like, what
simultaneously.
Simultaneously. Because, that's the birth of punk rock, or hardcore, whatever labels it might be, but
that came a little bit later in '78.
What was the first show that you photographed?
Actually, it was the Motels at Madame Wong's, which I liked their early stuff. It was dark and moody and stuff, but right away the Hong Kong Cafe opened, and I go, "Oh, this is the shit. I'm gone." You know, and it's like I went to Madame Wong's about 3 times, I think, but you know, I lived at the Hong Kong Cafe. I always said that Madame Wong's is where the new wave went to die. And I always thought it was really bizarre and just ridiculous that, you know, they say punk and new wave, you know, and people say, "You're in the new wave?" And I go, "Fuck no, I like punk rock." You know, and it's like, they're not, why do they say them in the same sentence? It amazes me. It makes no sense. They were going on just chronologically the same, but it's like they don't relate at all.
You know, back then it was obviously all film. Digital world we live in now, but were you in high school? Were you in college? Were you processing it yourself, going to a lab or at your apartment? What was your process in making those photos?
I was 29. At first, I was sending my negatives through Thrifty to process, and then I met a friend that he was a high school photography student, and then I set up the darkroom. Finally, and we both used it, and it was like we lived in there.
Yeah. Do you still print?
No.
I mean, I grew up in the. For me, I picked up a camera through skateboarding, and it was high school, and it was black and white darkroom, and I just saw the magic of the first time I saw print, and I was like, I loved
it. Oh, watching it come up.
Yeah. The developer is something about
the smell,
it.
The chemistry, the pollution.
Yeah, so bad for the earth and yourself.
Yeah.
physically, but that's what really was one of those things where I was like, I really loved it. Do you feel like the process in the dark room, when you were doing that, were you thinking about that and when you were shooting your photos, right? Because, I mean, a lot of your stuff, you were using flash as well, correct?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Right. And I mean, back then,
it was real low light, a lot of that stuff too. You virtually had to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And did that, were you, how much was black and white and how much was color?
Back then? Mm-hmm. Oh, I only shot, I think my friends, Christian Death, I shot them twice. I shot color photos twice of them. And I don't know, not much else, unless I was doing an album cover like Sleep and Slave Feed for 45 Grave and stuff. And I'd shoot color, but live stuff I always shot with black and white.
And what film was that?
Kodak Tri-X 400.
Do you have a favorite film?
That's what I always used, the Tri-X, yeah.
Would you self-roll it, or do you just buy it in the roll?
No, I'd buy it in the canister. But when I would take it out of my camera, instead of rolling it all the way back in, which you would have to break the canister open and then trim it and then line it up on the reel, I would back, as soon as it went slack, I would stop rolling it. I'd take it out, tear the end off, and shove it in my pocket. That meant that it was exposed, but the tail was out, so I could trim it all fancy. And then just turn off the light and go, you know.
Yeah, I remember a friend teaching me the technique of the same thing. It was more in skateboarding, like if a trick was made and you had that roll real quickly, scrape it on the ground. If you didn't have like a Sharpie, and then, you know, this is obviously bought like T-Max or you know, the black would scrape to the silver. Mm-hmm. And you'd be like, that's the keeper. So, you know, you know, you have so many amazing moments. You've shot so many great bands.
You've seen about that much, and I'm not exaggerating at all.
Well, that's the thing about photography. You know, obviously you captured a lot of history.
It wasn't history then.
Yes,
it wasn't at all. Wasn't. Nobody gave a fuck about it.
Yeah, right.
You know,
and you know, I got into shooting bands. And now, you know, but back then film was so valuable for someone like me, in high school.
Very expensive.
Film was so expensive.
Yeah.
So it was like each frame, you know, you were like,
make it count.
Mm-hmm. And you really just didn't whip out a camera like we do a cell phone and shoot every picture of these cute dogs.
A lot of pictures, you know, a lot of like the digital ones. It's like when I photographed Tom Waits, I took three frames. Yeah, click, 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 and I was done, and all three are printable. And, you know, if somebody had Tom Waits in front of them, now they'd take 200 photographs in a minute. Just, hey, there'll be a good one in there, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, just pay attention to what you're doing. It's all about lighting and timing and composition, you know, and, you know, how you can, once you get somebody in a lighting situation, you can actually have a move, you know, and like, oh, yeah, right there looks really good. I used to have a cord with a socket and a light bulb, and I'd turn it on, I'd study how the light fell on people's faces, and then I'd set up my key studio lights when I had a studio and was doing that type of photography, but just by studying the light on their faces.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I always say to myself, like, I see photographs, I see light. Like, I see a perfect portrait of you right here with your hands crossed. Like, it's in my blood, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot turn it off. Do you have that same thing? Are you constantly composing photos when you see?
No.
Nah. Do you love still taking pictures?
To a degree, yeah.
What do you love about it still?
Taking a good photo. Hey, Rita, you want to join the crew? Come here. Oh, how's my sweet dog? Oh.
I mean, it's funny for me because I just still love it so much. But a lot of times what I always say is when I look at my own photographs, I still see what I learned from what I did wrong.
And it's not the best way to learn. You learn from your mistakes. You're not going to do it again.
Exactly.
That's the way I did.
Did you think you would have such a great career that you have? I mean,
no.
I
was doing it for the fun of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you working a job back then?
Oh, I had a bunch of shit jobs, yeah. Used to drive a forklift, I roasted coffee, I built diesel trucks, did all kinds of weird stuff. I started supporting myself quite quickly. You know, after a couple of years of shooting, I was supporting myself off of.
And was that mostly record covers or editorial?
Yeah. Both.
Right.
You know, well, I used to do, I call it the L.A. Bleeder and the L.A. Weekling, that I worked for both of them. And I lived in Covina, and I would drive like somewhere to West L.A. or Hollywood or something to do a photograph. And then I would turn around and go back home and develop it and print it and choose a photo and then turn around and drive back and deliver it to him. And like the reader was on Wilshire, on like, you know, mid Wilshire, actually west of that. And then I think the LA Weekly was up on Hollywood Boulevard or something.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, and I'd do that and I'd get paid 30 or 40 bucks. And it was like, that would have been basically a 100-mile trip of driving.
Yeah, I know where Covina is. That's...
Yeah, so like it's 25, 26 to downtown, so that makes it 100 miles just like shooting, delivering, and buying the film and paying for the processing. But I got my name out there every week.
Right.
You know? And then one time there was an exploiter riot in Huntington Park in 1983 or 2 or something, and I was there and I shot a bunch of pictures. And so the next morning, both those rags were calling me up and goes, "Hey, we heard you were there last night. We want pictures." And I printed three different photos. I did two sets of three different photos and gave them to them. They both ran the same one, and they were all pissed off at me. And it's like, this wasn't an assignment.
Yeah, you know, asked.
Who said you had exclusivity? And it was like, hey, it was just a fluke. They chose the same one. And, you know, I quit working for them both at the same time. It's like, okay, enough of you clowns.
What are, you know, whether if you want to say it's pride or proudest or what are...
Just pride is a sin.
I've been doing some interviews lately. I really watch the way I ask these questions. Ahmad Jamal was like, there's no great, there's no favorite. And it really made me rethink about that because, you know, he's right.
There's no one, I'm sorry.
No great or favorite. Because I'd be like, who's your favorite musician you recorded with? And I love them all. Do you have some of your favorite photos? Like, is there a handful we can talk about that you really love?
Well, I'm still discovering some out of my files. You know, I'm in the process of working on a second book and been scanning stuff. I just found a really killer picture of 98-pound weakling Tony adolescent in the crowd with Mike Ness up working on the stage, pulling him out of the crowd. That's pretty neat.
That's awesome.
That's a good photo.
What about some of your favorite just shows?
The shows
concerts that,
you
went to? Yeah, if you had to pick a couple that you still to this day are like, that was such an amazing show.
Well, I've seen a lot of those. Like, you know, I saw the Mothers of Invention when Freak Out was released. That was amazing. I saw Captain Beefheart when Trout Nash were up, like, that was released. A bunch of different. I saw the Kinks at the Whiskey, T-Rex at the Whiskey. T-Rex is amazing. I'm not a big fan of pop music, but those guys rule.
Right.
They're so great.
What about some punk rock moments?
I kind of thought you were alluding to that. But I see I'm older and I did all kinds of other stuff before this stuff. You know, the early Dead Kennedy shows at the Whiskey in 79 and 80 were just fantastic. The Black Flag, like the Barn show with the Dead Kennedys and Minor Threat and MDC and, you know, Circle Jerks and Wasted Youth at the Whiskey. There's a bunch of great shows.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, those are all greats to me, you know, and your photography.
Bad Brains.
Yeah. The HR jumping shot. It's straight up.
And what I like about that photograph is he's actually levitating. He's not moving. He topped out right at that millisecond. And the microphone's floating. He's not going up or down. He's like right there. That's what I like. You kind of get that impression that he's sort of almost levitating, I think.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. You know, the Circle Jerks Group Sex cover that I did, that was at the Marina Del Rey Skate Park when I shot that.
Yeah, that's a record I grew up with. And I remember hearing that. It didn't really translate. I just looked at the big group.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, no, it's at a skate park. Were you more Keith Black Flag or Circle Jerks?
What do you mean?
Do you like Keith and which band better?
I never saw Keith and Black Flag. But I like them both.
Right. What was your first Black Flag show that you saw? Who was the singer?
Dez.
Dez.
79 or 80. Yeah.
Wow. And one thing that I thought about over here, it's kind of like, I really love like jazz music, but everybody thinks of me as like skateboarder, rock, or hip hop. But I love jazz. I love jazz and reggae specifically. And like we were talking, I just photographed 90-year-old piano player. That's like one of my favorite shoots of all time. Mm-hmm. What is maybe a show or a musician? I mean, you were kind of alluding with like T-Rex, but what is something that is polar opposite that you've photographed from your HR moment? Whether is there an artist that isn't predictable to what people associate with?
I've done some weird covers, if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, let's hear them.
This clown name, the record was called L'Amour by Lewis, but the guy's name was Randy Wolf. That's just something in New Age. Organ music I never heard, and he skipped me for the payment. I did an album cover for Adrian Smed, the guy from TJ Hooker's.
No way.
It's weird shit, man. It's like, hey, I'll do that. Okay, if you want me to do it. Oh, I was going to say, I never asked for work in 44 years. I've never asked anybody for work. I've never had a published phone number.
How would people contact
you? I've never run an ad.
Yeah.
And I use funeral sympathy cards with my information on them for business cards. It's just word of mouth. You know, if you do good work, people will find you. You know, I'm never going to go out and start kissing any ass in the art world or the photography world. It's like, no, if you do good work, you don't have to do that garbage.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about a couple of my favorite photos. First, Damaged. Like, what was that photo shoot? How did that come about?
Well, the band wanted me to shoot the cover, and they talked about a concept of Henry breaking the mirror. And I came up with a way how to do it. You know, I shot it at a place called the Hawksley House, an old 20s wood frame house in Hollywood by the freeway. And when I went over there to shoot, they had a mirror there, and I went to shoot. I brought a bottle of red Indian ink with me. And when I got there, I took duct tape and put it on the back of the mirror and turned it over and cleaned it. And then I hit it with a hammer, and then I cleaned it again. And then I took my red Indian ink out in the kitchen and started playing around with what was out there to make the blood. And so I came up with red Indian ink for color, liquid dishwashing soap for consistency, and instant powdered coffee for color and consistency, and mixed it up in the kitchen and went out and did it. See, if he just went bam, there wouldn't be any blood on his ear.
Yeah, you know? I thought it was real the whole time.
It looks, you know, it looked, that's what it's supposed to look like, you know, but it was all set up. When I did those photos, a lot of those photos, like I was, you know, set it up and created it and made it happen by manipulating light and doing different stuff.
But like Damaged, you didn't have Polaroid to test it. You just...
I shot it with a 35, yeah.
Yeah, you just started with 35. So you didn't know if you had it until you processed it.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. But isn't it funny how confident we were when that's all we knew?
Well, I knew my camera like a crazy.
Yeah, and you don't with digital. That's the problem, is you don't have to, unfortunately. What about Wild in the Streets? I want to hear about that. I want to hear how that got put in focus. I want to hear everything about
it. Nothing, but it wasn't in focus. That's the problem.
How did that shoot go down?
I don't know. I went up to San Francisco with the Circle Jerks and Social Distortion. We drove up there, and they wanted me to do this Wild in the Streets album cover. And so it was, I don't know. There was a parade, and they decided to crash the parade, which would kind of add to the chaos of Wild in the Streets. And they were all scared of getting busted. And I had to run ahead of them and slide to a stop and turn around and try and focus and then shoot the frame and then focus again and shoot a frame and maybe get off another one. And then have to run ahead because they were walking really fast and they're right up on top of me again. you know, and I did that a couple of times, and then everybody kind of split and got out of there before the cops showed up, type of thing. And it was like this crappy photo, in my opinion. And then my good friend, the art director, knocked the band members out in black and white, which made them look cropped in. So it made it even like, you know, it's out of focus. It sucks, you know, like first thing you do is focus the camera. That's the first thing. And then you work on the composition.
Well, I mean, if, you know, not that it matters, but I never saw that at all. I always saw an amazing photo. So.
Well, the group sex was the first album I did. I'm happy with that. And I created what, you know, and what Diane's in Cabbage Treatment and stuff. It's an icon.
Yeah.
You know?
It's historic.
You know, I don't think that Wild in the Streets is. But, you know, Dan, the first year, so well, and then really well known.
Yes.
I did the photo and the graphic treatment and the typeset on the cover.
Oh, really? I love that.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.